Welcome to Get Over It, the Consciousness Transforming Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. Folks, we've got a great show today. We're going to be speaking with Dave Nasseni, and I'll probably say that wrong, so he can correct me later. And we're going to be talking about his book, It's My Life to Thrive and Stay Alive as a Caregiver in this time of COVID-19. And if you're not even dealing with COVID-19, if you have someone who truly needs your care on a daily basis, you know it can be draining, and it actually can kill you if you're not careful with managing your time and your boundaries. So this is going to be a great show for all of the caregivers out there. Now, if you're not a caregiver and you know someone who is, send them the show because they're going to need to hear this information. Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you shift your consciousness to break through blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you let go of the BS that is holding you back. But you know, I always ask the question, are you truly ready to? And by the way, folks, BS is belief system. A bit about me for my new listeners, intuitive since birth. I'm a third-generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience supporting people to break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing cutting-edge information that enables you to prosper and thrive. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I am the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I also author 2 books. I provide consultations and healings in all areas of life that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your very best life. My clients tell me that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. To find out more about me and the services I offer, go to my website, and that's MoniqueChapman.com, and I invite you to like me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. My guest today, Dave Nasseni, is a speaker, syndicated radio host, life coach, and best-selling author of It's My Life to Thrive and Stay Alive as a Caregiver. However, his most important role is caregiver to his beautiful wife, Charlene, who suffered a massive stroke back in 1996 that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Dave has recently appeared on over 34 network morning shows from Washington, D.C. to Hawaii, and he has shared the stage with Suzanne Summers at Harvard. And you can check him out at his website, and that is caregiverdave.com. Again, that's caregiverdave.com. And we're going to refer to him for the rest of this show as Caregiver Dave. Well, welcome, Caregiver Dave.
Thank you for having me on the show. That was quite an introduction, and now I know where to send the possessed people. Thank you for that.
There you go. You know, not the crazies, just the possessed. How did you get started in all this caregiver stuff? I mean, your wife had the stroke, and she seems to be thriving even after all of this. Were you interested in this before her stroke, or is this post-stroke?
Oh, no. This was nothing that I knew anything about. I was just a normal guy running my gas station. And about 23 years ago, my wife complains to me about this headache she'd been having for 3 days. It was the headache of her life. It was a Labor Day weekend. So who wants to go to the ER on a holiday weekend? So she thought she'd just wait and see if it went away, right? Dangerous words. Let's see if it goes away. Well, unfortunately, when the ambulance arrived, it was too late. She had suffered a massive stroke. It left her severely speech impaired, paralyzed on one side. And in that moment, Monique, our world turned upside down. I mean, nothing would ever be the same again. And Charlene just changed. You know, she couldn't talk, and she was frustrated, and she thought we were all playing tricks because she heard the words coming out of her mouth correctly, but it was just gibberish to us. Strange how the brain works, and so she became angry and bitter most of the time, and for the next 2 years it was hell. It got so bad that I had to sit down and write her a letter. I said, "Dear Charlene, why are you so mean to me? It's so hard being your husband, taking care of you 24/7 without getting any crumbs of appreciation or love in return." I mean, I know it's hard on you, but you're making it even harder on us and me. I just don't think I can be with you anymore. I mean, I'll take care of you financially, but I just can't be with you.
It got that bad.
Like, tell me how you really feel. Well, I took that letter in my hands, and I read it over and over again, which I often do when I write letters. And I said, I can't give this to my sweet, wonderful, beautiful wife, my love of my life, my soulmate, the mother of my children. So I just put it in the filing cabinet and went on in my isolation and loneliness. And fortunately, about a few days later, I found a card in my pocket. I don't know how it got there, who gave it to me, but it was inviting me to a caregiver support group. Now, again, I didn't even know what a caregiver was, let alone a support group. But I figured, well, what do I got to lose? You know, somebody gave this to me. They probably thought I needed it. So I went.
Uh-huh.
And everything changed. I met people there that were just like me, burned out caregivers. Excuse me.
That's okay.
And I learned that if I didn't take care of me, I couldn't take care of my wife. And I was reminded that the airlines tell us in the event of an emergency, put your oxygen mask on first before you help your loved one with their mask. Hello, you know, what an amazing metaphor for all of life. Take care of you first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not out of selfishness, but out of survival. And so I just started taking care of me so I can take care of her.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I felt selfish and I felt guilty. But then I remembered, hey, these professional people, they know what they're talking about. They're telling you to do this. I'm just going to do it. I'm not going to feel guilty. I'm not going to feel selfish. And slowly, very, very slowly, she started, you know, responding and coming around. And slowly and eventually, she started becoming her old self again. And after a couple of years, might even have been 2.5 years, you know, our love was rekindled. And I was able to realize that there were so many other caregivers out there who are suffering and feeling lost and alone, going through pain. And I didn't want them to give up like I almost gave up. I didn't want them to hurt anymore. So I became Dave, the caregiver's caregiver. And now, as you said, I host a syndicated radio show heard in all 50 states, 135 countries, 35 TV shows from Hawaii to Washington, D.C. I've spoken on stages like Carnegie Hall and NASDAQ and Harvard and West Point with Martha Stewart and Ice-T and Suzanne and all those people. And I'm writing my fourth book and just helping caregivers to not let their loved one's illness or disease and the coronavirus these days from killing you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my story.
Okay, well, you know, I think it's on your website, or it might be in your book, I don't remember which, about 30% of the caregivers actually pass away before the person that they're caring for does. That's how much energy is zapped from you. And I remember my mom, she suffered dementia, and she had stage 4 cancer when she was finally diagnosed. And it was rough taking care of her at home. I got to the point where I couldn't do it anymore. She was a runner with the Alzheimer's, and then with the cancer and, you know, all the issues around that, it just became impossible. So I ended up placing her, but even when she was placed, I had to go every day because the place was a crappy, shitty place.
That's
actually made
that
national news recently. So if you look up Hayward, California,
Hayward, California,
healthcare centers, the one that's in the news, that's that's where I placed my mom, and the care was bad. So as a caregiver, I mean, you feel guilty if you're not giving your heart, your soul, your everything. So how does one come to balance, caregiver Dave, with caring for the person that they feel they're charged to care for, but also providing that self-care for themselves?
Well, let me just first of all share that my mother also had dementia, and so did my mother-in-law, and we looked and looked and looked for the right place for her. You know, hopefully it was close by us so it'd be convenient for us, but we couldn't find anything. I mean, 9 out of 10 nursing homes or even independent places, I wouldn't put my cat in, let alone my mother. Well, we finally found one about 35 miles away, and it was amazing. And I just thought it would be better if she was in a quality care facility than someplace that was convenient for me to go visit. So we visited as often as we could, 35 miles. Yeah, it's not too long. And it was such a famous place that we saw a famous artist there who had a gallery in Hawaii. And she said her daughters searched all across the country for the best facility and found that one right there in Glendale, California. And so we got lucky, and we had her qualified for Medicaid in California. It's called Medi-Cal and Medicare, which is called the Golden Ticket. And so they were paying $3,500 a month under the assisted living waiver program. So it was great. And so how do you find a good nursing home? Let me just throw this in, some free information. Well, arrive unannounced. Don't let them know you're coming, and give it the smell test. See if it smells like urine or bleach, like a hospital. And then go down the hallway and see if all the chairs are just facing the walls, staring at the space, or if they're actually actively involved in programs, you know, like jigsaw puzzles or bingo or Wii or stuff like that. But you have to do your homework so that you don't find one of those places from hell that you found for your mother.
Well, you know
and
what?
Sometimes they just aren't out there.
I did everything that you were talking about, and I did it on two separate occasions, and it was fine both times. However, once we got in there, the administration changed, and things rapidly went downhill. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of like the luck of the draw, and you don't know. I mean, you do your research, and you do the best you can. But say, you know, the person's at home because it looks like you didn't institutionalize your wife. So walk us through caring for someone who has had, you know, the disability that your wife has had. And she's come out the other side, because we're going to talk a little bit about her cooking. But talk to us about, you know, going through that on a daily basis. What is that like, and how when you're caring for her, you can equally care for yourself?
Well, first of all, let me say that there are three huge mistakes that caregivers make that causes a lot of them to become that 30% statistic that dies before their loved one. And there's actually another statistic that says even many more than that will become sicker than the ones they care for, eventually needing a caregiver of their own. So you don't want to go there. But if you just do these three things to avoid the three biggest mistakes, then you probably won't be one of those people. And the first biggest mistake caregivers make is, like I said before, they don't know how to put their needs first. We've been on planes. We just tune them out when they start saying about the oxygen mask. But put your mask on first. Put your needs first. And that is a huge, huge thing that you can do, because if you don't take care of you, you can't take care of them. And so the average caregiver will just give and give and give and give until there's nothing left to give. You know, it's like my cell phone. It starts flashing, you know, 2%, and I say, oh, I got to get a charger. And then we forget. Now it's flashing 1%, and then it dies on you, or your gas tank. Some people like to keep their tanks full. Some people will wait till it's below the E. Don't do that, because things happen. The second biggest mistake caregivers make is they don't know how to ask for help. And that's true, because I am guilty of that as well, and I'm the caregiver's caregiver, and even I can't do it. So you got to force yourself. Everyone has one of these little black things that I'm holding in my hand. It's called a cell phone. You turn it on, you punch in your number, and you talk. Hello, Mom? I need help. Grandma's driving me crazy. Call your brother, call your sister, call your wife, ex-husband, call anybody, but get over that silly notion. If you can't do this all by yourself, Mr. Macho Man, or Mrs. Wonder Woman, then you're going to be a failure as a caregiver, and that attitude will kill you. The third biggest mistake caregivers make is they allow people to guilt them. You know, you're not doing enough. You're not doing it good enough. It reminds me of Sanford and Son. Remember that show?
Yeah.
And Fred Sanford used to guilt his son Lamont into doing all sorts of cockamamie, harebrained schemes that was not in his best interest. It went something like this. Oh, it's a big one. No, son, really, it's a big one. I'm coming to meet you, honey. And Lamont would fall for that con every single time, and caregivers are the same way. You know, they're manipulated. You can't do that, because that kind of guilt will kill you. It's kind of like being handcuffed to your loved one for the rest of your life in caregiver prison with no possibility of parole. You don't want to go there. So I came up with this CARE formula, C-A-R-E. C, communicate with your friends, and don't isolate yourself. A, ask for help and be specific. R, rest. Caregivers need 8 hours rest every single night. And the average caregiver only gets 2 or 3. Now, I can't survive on 2 or 3. Maybe you can. And then eat healthy, nutritious foods. Don't eat junk food. Junk food's got sugar, chemicals, processed ingredients. All that stuff will kill you. And so that's why I wrote my book. It's My Life Too, Thrive and Stay Alive as a Caregiver. Because the average caregiver, this book won't help everybody. I'm just going to put that out there. It won't help about 30% of caregivers. Because I have a Facebook page, Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver, and there's about 37,000 followers. And I've heard every story in the book. And a lot of them argue with me when I tell them, you know, that caregiving can be fun if you have the right attitude, and it can be rewarding. And they'll argue and say, no, it isn't. You know, you haven't had my day. You know, diapers are dirty. You know, and they just go on and on and on with a rotten, closed-minded attitude. And those, unfortunately, are the ones that will probably not make it. So my book is for caregivers who know they should be putting their needs first, but they just don't know how. So I believe that everyone is either going to become a caregiver or need a caregiver. There's no escaping it. Caregiving will touch your life one way or another. So now is the time to learn how to become a caregiver, not like me when I wasn't on my resume. I didn't know what I was getting involved in. So that's why I started the website too, caregiverdave.com. It's a membership website, and it's full of articles and blogs and videos and just all sorts of tools and resources. And you get my coaching, okay? It's a membership website. I figured out how much can a caregiver afford to spend on themselves? Because you can't get a caregiver to spend anything on themselves. They'll give their last dollar to their loved one and their last ounce of breath to them. But $97 was the number that I came up with, because I'm a caregiver and I asked myself, well, how much would you spend to stay out of the hospital, stay out of the ER? You've been to the hospital. You don't even want to go back there to get tested. Because it's just like, no. And death, I mean, how much is life worth? So it's not $97 a month. It's not even $97 a year. It's $97 for the rest of your life. And I'm a life coach. I usually get $100 to give coaching to a coaching session. But for $97, you get all that stuff. You get years and years of experience and videos and tools and resources. Plus, you get an introductory coaching session for me. So it's a great, great value. And so that's what I promote for me, to try to get caregivers to stay alive. And Okay. Hopefully I answered your question somewhere in there.
I think you did. Folks, we're speaking with Caregiver Dave. His book, It's My Life Too, Thrive and Stay Alive as a Caregiver. You can check him out at his website. And that's caregiverdave.com. Plus all the other places that he just mentioned. So, Caregiver Dave, talk to us about the grief process. There is a grief process. What is it, and how do we walk through it?
Well, anytime we suffer loss, we go through the grief process. We grieve. It doesn't matter what kind of loss. I mean, if your girlfriend dumps you, that's a loss. If the doctor says you've got cancer, you know, that's a loss. Anticipatory grief can happen with an anticipatory loss. Maybe you didn't lose anything yet, but you're anticipating that you're going to lose something. You know, if your wife files divorce papers, that's a loss, and so on. There is a grief process. The first one is typically denial. Oh my God, this isn't happening. You know, and the brain cannot process it. It's just too much change too quickly. And hopefully you can get through that denial, because if you don't, then you become delusional. My mother-in-law just would not accept the fact that she had dementia, so she was creating these delusions. Well, there's nothing wrong with my memory. I can remember all sorts of things. And she could, but she couldn't remember what she said 5 minutes ago. And so she would rather believe in her mind that somebody is breaking in the house 5 times a day, stealing and hiding all her stuff, than she has a memory problem. So you want to get through the denial. Once we get through the denial, we realize, oh my God, this is really happening. Then you get angry. And you get angry at yourself. You get angry at the doctor. You get angry at your loved one. You know, my wife was angry at me. It wasn't my fault, but I was the only one around to receive all of that anger, right? The Mills Brothers sang a song a long time ago and said, you only hurt the ones you love, the ones you shouldn't hurt at all. I should have sang it, but I'll spare you. And so after we get through the anger, and by the way, there's nothing wrong with being angry. You know, there's even Jesus had righteous indignation. You know, he got angry at the money changers, turned the tables over and stuff. But your anger has to be productive. It can't hurt anyone, you know, innocent by-party. And so once we get over the anger and we get it out, then we go through something called bargaining. It's like, okay, how can I get out of this? And in the example of the girlfriend, it's like saying, well, can't we at least be friends? You know, I mean, I don't want to cut this tie, or, you know, some things that we can't really negotiate out of, like death or cancer or things like that, or we're divorced where the other one is like through. But we try. And after we realize that bargaining typically doesn't work, then we move on to the next phase of grief. And that's depression. It's the most serious one, because that's where Robin Williams was, and Kate Spade and Kurt Cobain and all those people who sadly took their lives. I mean, Anthony Bourdain, I wish I was that guy. He had a great head of hair. He traveled the world. He ate all these exotic foods. He had his own TV show. He killed himself? Really? Depression is serious. And you want to make sure, you want to go see your doctor. There's a difference between being sad and being depressed. And they have antidepressants, and some people say, no, no, I don't want any kind of drugs. Excuse me, that early morning frog. And so I say, go see your doctor. It could take as long as 6 months to get the right kind of antidepressant, the right dosage, the right type, the manufacturer, et cetera. But hang in there, because like I said, if you don't solve this problem, you could end up dead. Mm-hmm. And it's not a recreation drug. It doesn't make you feel high or anything. It just restores a chemical imbalance in the brain so that you feel normal again. Well, the final stage of grief is where you embrace the new normal. You're okay with life as it is now. And you basically just say, hey, I'm okay with this. And you move on. And that is a great place to be.
Okay, well, I want to go back to. Okay, I want to go back to for the depression. There's still such a stigma around mental illness in our country. How can one truly feel at ease with themselves, with going to seek the help that they desperately need? But again, that stigma is there, and they're like, well, no, you know, it's bad enough that whomever is going through their process with their disability, and now you're saying, oh, well, now I'm going to go get help. I'm going to go to a psychiatrist. That just doesn't sit right with me. So how can one get past that?
There is such a stigma with psychiatrists, psychologists, any kind of counseling. You know, your marriage might be falling apart, but no, I'm not going to counseling because, you know, I don't want that stigma or that label put on me. And depression and antidepressants, you know, my advice to you, and it seems kind of harsh, is get over it. Because it's better than death, because we're talking about a life and death situation here. I mean, if you had cancer, you'd go get some help. You'd get on chemotherapy or whatever it is they're offering these days. If you were a diabetic, you'd get insulin and so on. A chemical imbalance in the brain is a disorder. It's a disease. It's something that has to be taken care of. My wife had a stroke. And in addition to just the normal things that anyone who had a stroke and the loss that they would feel and be depressed about, in addition to that, there was also a chemical imbalance in the brain when the brain suffers a stroke. So she had a couple of things going on there. So she had to see a doctor. She was already in the hospital. We were living in the hospital for 6 weeks. They let me sleep in the bed beside her. I mean, my daughter had to force me to go home and shower and, you know, make sure the gas station was still there and so on. You just have to realize that you got to get over it. And hopefully, you know, your friends and loved ones in the family can have some kind of intervention and say, listen, you know, give her some information, education, some stuff on the internet that says this is just normal. It's like alcoholism, right? Alcoholism and drug addiction used to be such a stigma, but now, you know, all your favorite movie stars and athletes are doing it, and it's like, you know, the Betty Ford Center. I mean, the First Lady was doing it. So a lot of stigmas have been removed. So there's there's just no reason to feel that way anymore. So just get over it.
Yeah, well, being married to Donald Trump, the first lady would need some type of help, but I'll just leave that there.
We were talking about the Fords.
Okay. I was going to say
Betty Ford. Yes.
Okay, Betty Ford, most definitely.
But yeah, she had an alcohol problem, and she actually started the Betty Ford Center.
Exactly, which is, from what I understand, very effective. Now, there's so many caregivers out there, and, you know, they're drowning in their own caring, and they look around, they say, oh, my goodness, I need some help. If my sister would come, if my brother, whomever, and they don't seem to have that support system around them. So how can they actually receive help? How can these caregivers actually receive some assistance, much-needed assistance?
Well, you know, if you're a caregiver, it's likely that you were, quote unquote, selected. You know, you might have 5 or 10 brothers. You know, black families might have 12 or 13 siblings. And one by one, who's going to take care of mom? You know, well, I can't do it because, you know, I'm just not good with that. And I can't do it because, you know me, I got a temper. I don't get along with mom. And I live in New York and she's in California. And one by one, the finger eventually points to you. You're the guy. And maybe it's because you're the favorite, right? Parents aren't supposed to have favorites, but we all know they do. Maybe you're the most compassionate and empathetic and sympathetic one. Whatever the reason, you were selected, okay? And you're the one. And yes, you're right. It is so difficult to get help, even from your siblings, because they've all got excuses, etc. So I say, hey, send money. If you can't spend your time here, you can't come and visit, you can't contribute in any way, send money. And if you haven't got money, then send something, because you've got to throw in your care, because, you know, unfortunately, a lot of these siblings, well, just put her in a nursing home. See, that's why you're the caregiver and they're not, because we already talked about nursing homes. I guess I forgot your question if I didn't answer it.
I was just wondering, how could these people actually receive more help? You know, everybody needs a respite from, being that primary caregiver every now and then. So how can these
people
reach out?
There are lots of resources. There's lots of resources out there. I mean, go to your local senior center. A lot of them offer daycare for seniors. A lot of them offer other things. There's a book that I recommend all the time. It was written by Camille Superson, Superson, and it's a caregiver resource guide. It almost looks like an encyclopedia, and it'll tell you how to get free stuff, government aid, free food, stuff from the VA. If you're a veteran or you're the spouse of a veteran, you can get free assisted living. You can get respite care. You can have someone come to the house. Social Security, county, state, local, federal. I mean, it's just full of social. It's just full of all stuff about how to get your loved one qualified for Medicaid. And so that is what I recommend anytime someone says, I need help, I need money, I need assistance. I always recommend Camille Superson's book. And there are things you can do out there. There are respite programs. They do cost money. But if you can somehow get qualified for that, you know, by getting on Medicaid. So I say, if you're a caregiver today and things aren't that bad yet, but you can see a few years down the road, I would say start getting your loved one qualified for Medicaid today. You know, there are things that you can do because there's a look-back period. And so you want to get all of their finances out of their names, get the house out of their name, and start paying the bills. So you are the person who is now financially responsible for this person. And so basically they don't have assets anymore. They don't have income anymore. And it would be a lot easier to do this if you did this a year or two or three before it actually needs to happen. Okay? Hopefully that helps.
But you can also do, because I went through this with my mom, I left everything in her name until we were out of money. And then 3 months. So you go back 3 months and, you know, you make sure there's no more than a grand in their account, you know, if they have an account. And, you know, those things will help you qualify, you know, for state aid and all that.
Yeah.
And make sure that you do.
If there's not many assets, that would be the preferred way to do it. But if unfortunately, you know, she has a home and she has a lot of equity in the home, then you've got to start doing it the other way, because it doesn't take long, even if you have a lot of equity in your house, to go through that money. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you want to be in a position of the former, where she has very little, if any, funds. And the way to do that is, like I says, transfer it out and start paying the bills, you know, mm-hmm. and it will go down.
Okay. Well, you know, you said your mom, you know, or your mother or mother-in-law, one I don't remember right now,
both
had difficulty coming to terms with, you know, I have Alzheimer's.
My mother-in-law.
Okay, so what about the caregiver who doesn't know that they're burnt out? So what are some signs of caregiver burnout?
Well, I'm so glad you asked that question, because at Caregiver Dave, we have a free burnout quiz. If you don't know that you're burned out, you know, there's things that you can do, questions you can ask yourself, like, you know, when's the last time you went to a movie and dinner with a friend? And if it's been a while, then chances are you're burned out, you're isolating yourself. Are you constantly catching every bug that comes around? That means your immune system is compromised. You're probably burned out. You're letting stress get the best of you. You know, there's a quiz that you can take on caregiverdave.com, which was put out by AARP, and you can do it right there online, and it asks you just 6 simple questions. Can you imagine? We're going to tell you if you're burned out just by asking you 6 questions, and go on there, and it'll give you a score. And if your score is too low, then that means you're definitely burned out, and so on. Or I should say it's the other way around. If your score is too high, you're definitely burned out. And then it will give you tips on what you can do to lower your score. And I'd say a support group is number one. You know, we need to know that we're going through something normal, and we need someone to vent. You know, you don't want to vent to your friend that used to come around all the time. And otherwise, they're not going to come around anymore. Nobody wants mm-hmm. to be around a Debbie Downer. You want to save the venting and the frustration and the cursing and the yelling and the screaming to the caregiver support group, because that's what they're there for. They can vent to you. You can vent to them, and then you both feel better. You know? Mm-hmm. And when my wife was initially going through the stroke, we used to go to a combination support group. In one room, they would put the caregivers of the stroke people, and in the other room, they would put the stroke survivors. And they would constantly talk about each other, you know, oh, my caregiver did this to me, and the caregiver saying, oh, my loved one did this to me, and, you know, and they would both leave happier for just being venting, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's always best to have a group of people that you can talk to. So for whatever reason, if you feel you can't get out and find a physical support group to go to, you know, this is, you know, the era of doing everything online. So look online, and it doesn't have to be the first place that you come across. You know, don't be afraid to experiment. And if it doesn't feel right for you, leave that group and go to another one. You have free will.
Right.
And as long as you practice your free will and take care of yourself, this could be, you know, a lot easier to get through the caregiving process. So, Dave, talk to us about your wife. She had the stroke that back in 1996. She really enjoyed cooking, and now she cooks all the meals and she hosts dinner parties. Tell us about this.
Yeah, this woman was and is amazing. She was an interior decorator. She was a hairdresser. She was a gourmet cook. She used to win blue ribbons at the LA County Fair for baking. I'm Middle Eastern, so she learned from my grandmother before my grandmother died all the Syrian recipes that none of her children wanted to care about. And here my American wife sat down with my grandmother when she was still alive, and because my grandmother is a pinch of this and a dash of that, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, no, wait. And she would measure out the pinch to see exactly how much it was, write it down, and measure out the dash of that. And so she got this cookbook of my grandmother just by watching her and measuring all the stuff. And she would bake baklava, you know, and everyone loves that pastry. And she would win these gold medals, blue ribbons, rather. And so... in addition to that, she was very strong in her faith at our church. She was a counselor. She was a wedding coordinator. She knows how to put on just like presidential weddings and receptions and showers and this and that. And she was a seamstress. She used to make ceramic dolls and I mean, I can go on and on and on the things. She's basically, like I said, she was the cross between Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And so when she had a stroke, it was devastating. You know, she couldn't drive anymore. That was devastating. I didn't sell her car. She had a relationship with her 1.5 year old granddaughter. And all of a sudden the granddaughter just knew that something was different about her and didn't want to go near her. And that was devastating. We had to move from our two-story house, and that was the house that she just loved, and, you know, bury me in the backyard. I'm going to stay here till I die. And she just suffered loss after loss after loss. And it took a couple of years of hell when I finally realized I had to move closer to the gas station, because I was commuting for 19 years, 35 miles. And she didn't want to go. And I finally gave her an ultimatum. I said, listen, either you're suffering or the gas station's suffering. I can't have that. We have to be close to each other. And she didn't want to move. And I told her, okay, well, fine. I'm leaving with or without you. You know, hopefully she was going to take the bluff, you know, because mm-hmm. I wouldn't do that, but I had to at least threaten her. And it took her 3 days to finally say, okay, I'll go, but I'm going to pick out the house. So I said, fine. And of course, I'm giving her word. She didn't say these things. She communicates these things. So she still can't talk, and she still can't walk after 23 years. But she can communicate through Pictionary and charades, two games I hate, by the way, but I'm learning to love.
Well, you've learned to love them, yes. Still,
yeah, yeah. And she still cannot walk because the right side doesn't work. So I got her this power chair, and she goes faster than I am. I got to get one of those chairs at the supermarket just to keep up with her.
Mm-hmm.
And so this type A woman who now, my first book was called One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words. It was our story, you know, our memoirs, because basically she only has use of one arm and one leg. And we counted about 100 words that she really knows, but really she only knows about a dozen or so. You know, that she can bring to her recollection. She does know about 100 words, but it's a long, painstaking process to try to get these words out of her. So basically she is a great communicator, because I've seen her at our restaurant while we're waiting for a table, when there were restaurants open, just talking to some guy, and they're laughing and slapping each other on the back, and I'm 15, 20 minutes later, I look over there and they're still having a great old time. And I said, what's going on over here? You know, and he had no idea that she doesn't know how to talk, but she communicates, you know, through gestures and facial and touching and pointing. And you know, they say that 85% of communication is nonverbal, and she's got that part down really, really good. So for 2 years, she was just depressed after we moved into this new house, and everything was white, you know, and she never lives in a white house. She always has to have wallpaper and color and window dressings. And for a year and a half, our house was like stark white. And Christmas came around, because she's a Christmas nut. She decorates, you know, the best house on the block. It's all decorated from top to bottom. And we went through a dark Christmas. And my daughter and I, she was 18 at the time, she says, you know, we got to decorate this house because mom's not going to do it. And so we did our best. I mean, it was just nothing compared to what she did. But the following year, she started coming around, you know. She started making her peace with God, because I think one of the people that she was angry with was God. You know, why did you allow this to happen, you know? And so God started talking to her, and she just touches her heart and points to heaven and says, God, you know, like, I have peace. And,
mm-hmm.
and so she hired the kid who lives next door to paint the house, brought color into the house, made me help her with window dressings and valances. And now the house is a home, you know, and Charlene is back. And the next Christmas was all the nutcrackers came out, and you know, Charlene's back. And then she started to do dinner parties. Now it takes her 5 days to do the shopping and the preparation, but by golly, she does it. And she puts on this meal that's fit for a king.
Mm-hmm.
And then she started sewing, and then she started doing just, she basically can do everything she did before, but only now she does it with one arm and one leg and duct tape over her mouth. And I don't know how she does it.
Well, she decided to live life again. I mean, it's plain
and
simple as
that. I'll come home from the gas station, and food's on the table, and the laundry's done, and the dishes are done, and the house is clean, and I say, where are the elves that helped you? I'm just a blessed man, because she's very low maintenance, and I'm just so blessed. And she's my hero, and I love her.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful love story. We've been speaking with Caregiver Dave. His book is It's My Life Too, Thrive and Stay Alive as a Caregiver. Dave, our time is almost up. What pearl of wisdom would you like to leave our audience with today?
A pearl of wisdom. Well, funny you should mention that, because I have a video series called 5 Minutes of Dave's Hammock Wisdom. Because all my life I've been wise to give my teenage friends, advice on how to get a girlfriend. And when they would take my advice, they'd get it. And so I realized I love hammocks, and I always get this wisdom. I solve the world's problems, my friends' problems on a hammock. So I started doing these YouTube videos, and I realized that not everybody is on YouTube and the internet. So I transposed all of the videos into a book. Dave's Hammock Wisdom, 99 Lessons Learned Living Life. And so my pearl of wisdom to you, it's not out yet, but it will be soon, is that you just have to take care of you first, put boundaries in your life, don't let anyone upset you. Because if somebody's upsetting you, it's your fault, because you never told them where the boundary was. You never told them where the line was not to cross. And so now that you told them, you go back and say, you know what, you said something that really hurt me yesterday, but here's the new boundary. If you do that again, here's going to be the consequences, or if you say that again, or whatever it is. And when it happens, because it will happen again, like a child, they'll test. You either have to remind them what happened and implement the consequences, or just say, okay, this is a freebie. I know if this happens again, this will happen. And then you have to just enforce it. Do it like any parent would do. Sometimes our loved one is like that 2-year-old who just tests us, but you can't keep saying, if you do that again, you got to do it. Tough love. You got to just say what you do and do what you say. That's my pearl of wisdom.
Okay. So thank you, Caregiver Dave, for being with us today. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Audience for listening and taking action on what they've heard as we collectively get over it. And I do want you to remember that the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of self-care. Abundant blessings, light and love to all. Agape.